Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record program number 667, update on September 11th and related matters. This program is being recorded on March 22nd of the year 2009. Again, for newer listeners, please use the vast amount of information on the Spitfire website and related websites. Tons of information, both in audio form and print, and if some of the arguments that are presented here are overly referential, the information with which to fill in the blanks and connect the dots is available at great length on spitfirelist.com, the best website for anti-fascist information in the world. Sadly, glad it's there, but it's too bad there aren't other sites like it. In any event, we're going to plunge right in where we left off last on side one. That's an article from Front Page Magazine, a conservative publication which does some very good work on jihadist and Islamic fascist subjects, and yet was very supportive of the very Bush administration, which was tied to those elements through people like Talat Altman, Karl Rove, and Grover Norquist. It's just surreal to see this kind of schizophrenia. And sadly, it goes across the board. People here in the San Francisco Bay Area may very well have seen the Why Islam posters on muni buses. Those posters come from the Islamic Circle of North America. That's the sponsor, that's the group that has the whyislam.org website. It basically is the Jamaat-e-Islami, that's the Pakistani branch of the Muslim Brotherhood. The parent organization of Lashkar-e-Taiba, the parent organization of Al-Qaeda and Hamas, an Islamic fascist organization that is a major element of the Fascist International and has been from the pre-World War II period right on through the present. We're going to resume reading this article. I'm going to overlap it with the material you heard on side one, and the full URL for this will be in the description for the record program 667. The Islamic Circle of North America, or ICNA, was founded in 1971 via the Muslim Students Association, or MSA, as an umbrella group for South Asian-oriented mosques and Islamic centers. It also contains a youth division called Young Muslims, a multimedia media division called Sound Vision, a web information center called Why Islam, parenthetically, that's what's advertised on the muni buses in San Francisco. Indeed, if one looks at the web domain information for ICNA's official website, as well as a site for Why Islam, he/she will find that the site is registered to Farouk.net, a former mirror replica site of Jamaat-e-Islami's media division. Today, Farouk.net is being used to showcase the works of Maulana Muhammad Yusuf Islahi, a Jamaat-e-Islami leader. Further evidence of the connection between ICNA and Jamaat-e-Islami is found in a July 2000 unity meeting that took place in New York between ICNA and its Baltimore-based rival Jamaat al-Muslimin. Speaking for the side of ICNA in his native language of Urdu was none other than the president of Jamaat-e-Islami, Qazi Hussein Ahmad, who is still the head of JI. During the meeting, he stressed the need for participation in jihad, unquote. He stated that, again, Islam must be translated into political dominance, unquote. And he said that, quote, the sword and the Quran go together, unquote. His sharp rhetoric was not unusual given his public support for the Taliban and his numerous get-togethers with Osama bin Laden. So again, one of the things that is so unfortunate about the Muslim Brotherhood, which has been able to very successfully market itself in much of the West, including and especially the United States, as a moderate organization. And indeed, this Islamic fascist organization has, to a large extent, been able to assume the public face of Islam in the United States. And that is absolutely inappropriate because the vast majority of Muslims are not fascists and are not violent. And yet, with the Muslim Brotherhood successfully having transmogrified itself into the moderate-seeming, supposed civil rights representative of the Islamic community in this and other countries, It basically winds up polarizing the political debate and steering an awful lot of the Muslim community into a fascist slash violent jihadist viewpoint, at the same time as alienating a great many people from Islam and Muslims, mistakenly believing that they are violent and fascistic in nature. So it is singularly unfortunate. And I think ultimately an awful lot, it may very well be that the fate of the human race is in the hands of the Muslim community that seeks to reject the Muslim Brotherhood. In For the Record 656, we took a look at the Muslim Student Association, an Altaqua-connected Muslim Brotherhood front, and the struggle that took place in its University of Michigan at Dearborn chapter, which was dominated not only by Muslim Brotherhood-style jihadists, but specifically people associated with Hizb ut-Tahrir, an organization banned in Germany, and an organization that works in Germany with the German NPD, the German top German neo-Nazi party in Germany. One member of the MSA chapter at the University of Michigan at Dearborn who was attempting to reform and moderate that chapter was violently attacked and almost killed by some of the fascist elements in that chapter. Given that more than a sixth of the world's population is Muslim, if the Muslim Brotherhood, acting as an element of the Fascist International, is successful in steering the world's Muslim population down a fascist and violent path, then the world is doomed. So ultimately, I think the fate of humanity, the fate of the earth itself, lies in the hands of those Muslims who would resist Islamic fascism and who would resist the Muslim Brotherhood. Sadly, very few other groups of people have ever successfully resisted fascism, so if I'm somewhat pessimistic, people will perhaps forgive me. But ultimately, I think the fate of humanity and the fate of the world itself is in the hands of those Muslims who would resist Islamic fascism and the Muslim Brotherhood. It remains to be seen what takes place. And I think it is also absolutely incumbent on those elements around the world, conservative and progressive, who are not Muslim, to recognize the Muslim Brotherhood for the fascist element that it is and not allow them to continue to represent themselves as the face of Islam, because they are not. Yet another mass transit Muslim Brotherhood jihadist campaign has been taking place in New York. This is from the jihadwatch.org website, a very good one. It in turn is from a New York Post article. The New York Post is the ironies here again, and the political schizophrenia are boundless. The New York Post is a Rupert Murdoch paper. And, of course, Rupert Murdoch falls to the right of Ivan the Terrible. But the second largest stockholder in News Corp, Rupert Murdoch's organization, is none other than Prince Al-Walid of Saudi Arabia. And he's Muslim Brotherhood and does fundraisers in Saudi Arabia for Hamas, the Palestinian branch, or one of the Palestinian branches of the Muslim Brotherhood. So, surreal. But again, from the New York Post of July 21st of 2008, in turn, posted on the jihadwatch.org website, the following article is by Jeremy Olshan called Jihadists, Training Day for Jihadists, Muslim Subway Ads Have Terror Tie-In. And the article begins in characteristic New York Post style, All aboard! An Islamic group plans to blitz 1,000 subway cars with advertisements this September in a campaign being promoted by a Brooklyn imam whom federal officials have linked to a plot to blow up city landmarks. The group says its mission is to explain the true nature of Islam to non-Muslims who believe the religion is bent on acts of violence, but Siraj Wahaj, the inflammatory imam who appears in a promotional YouTube video for the project, has defended convicted bomb plotters and called the FBI and CIA the real terrorists, unquote. U.S. Attorney Mary Jo White even named Wahaj as one of 170 unindicted co-conspirators in the 1993 World Trade Center bombing and a thwarted plan to blow up a slew of buildings. Quote, in time, this so-called democracy will crumble and there will be nothing, and the only thing that will remain will be Islam, unquote, Wahaj said in one of his sermons. He also said, quote, if only Muslims were clever politically, they could take over the United States and replace its constitutional government with a caliphate, unquote. So, again, jihadist/Muslim Brotherhood elements behind the subway ads in New York, much as the milieu of the Mumbai massacre, the Pakistani offshoots of the Muslim Brotherhood, are behind the peaceful-seeming whyislam.org ads on muni buses in San Francisco. One of the major media voices that has come out of the Middle East, has emerged in the Middle East, and was at one time somewhat objective, and that is valued by progressive elements in the United States, and that is, of course, the Al Jazeera network. Sadly, it appears that the Muslim Brotherhood has been co-opting Al Jazeera as well. The following is from Douglas Farah's website. In turn, The Nation magazine has done some reportage on this. This is from January 16th of 2009. Douglas Farah titles this, The Islamist/Muslim Brotherhood Takeover of Al Jazeera? It reads in part, The Global Muslim Brotherhood Daily Report, free subscription required, has an interesting look at the growing Islamist agenda of the Al Jazeera TV station and the roots of the shift in the Muslim Brotherhood. It is an important observation since so much of the Arab world as well as the Western media look to the station to portray and interpret events, particularly the Hamas-Israeli conflict. It's easy to forget and shockingly seldom reported that Hamas is an organic part of the global Muslim Brotherhood according to Article 2 of its own charter, so that the Ikhwan, parenthetically Brotherhood, would seek to control the main medium for the outside world to interpret the conflict is not at all unusual. The report looks at Wada Khanfar, K-H-A-N-F-A-R, the station's general manager, as the driving force behind Al Jazeera's move toward embracing the Islamist agent while marginalizing other voices in the station that once had a significant role. In October of 2006, one of Al Jazeera's own correspondents stated that Mr. Khanfar had a Muslim Brotherhood background and asked him about it directly, receiving a non-denial and evasive reply. Mr. Wada, you have an Islamic background, specifically Muslim Brotherhood. Don't you think that this is conflicting with your position as a head of the biggest Arab media organization now? In fact, I do not classify myself as belonging to a certain political ideological movement, that firstly, I belong to this nation, including its collective legacy in mind, and that this is something I value and am keen on it. But I tell you clearly and frankly, Al Jazeera taught us always that our affiliation to Al Jazeera as an administration or press is an affiliation to an institution with deep-rooted rules and with a clear identity based primarily on proficiency and respecting the opinion and the other opinion, and it isn't absolutely based on differentiating between people on ideological, intellectual, or party basis. Yeah, that's, I think that's, that could be called non-denial and evasive as replies go. Douglas Farah goes on to write, interestingly, it was the Nation magazine article from 2007 that first reported on the growing Islamist agenda of the TV station. Whether it's reporting the Hamas perspective from the occupied territories without mention of the Palestinian Authority's version of events, or the fawning depiction elsewhere of Islamist parties and militias as the grassroots reflection of Arab sentiment, Al Jazeera has moved away from its ideologically diverse origins to a more populist/Islamist approach. After the March 2003 U.S. invasion of Iraq, Al Jazeera replaced its longtime secular bureau chief in Baghdad, Faisal Yassiri, with Wada Khanfar, who had reported from Afghanistan after the American invasion in 2001 and then Kurdish-controlled territory as the war with Iraq was launched in 2003. Shortly thereafter, the secular head of Al Jazeera, Mohammad Jassem Ali, was ousted, and he was replaced by Khanfar, whom nine current and former employees of the station interviewed for this article characterize as an Islamist. So, disturbingly, Muslim Brotherhood apparently infiltrating and co-opting Al Jazeera as well. A good website that keeps track of the Muslim Brotherhood is called globalmbreport.com. And, of course, MB refers to Muslim Brotherhood. The following is titled, U.S. Muslim Brotherhood Reacts to Arrest of Bin Laden Brother-in-Law. This is from March 5th of 2009. It reads in part, The U.S. Muslim Brotherhood is reacting to the arrest of a brother-in-law of Osama bin Laden's bodyguard on charges of lying about his ties to terrorist groups on his citizenship and passport applications. An AP report describes the case as follows. In the California case, information about the informant who spied on the Islamic Center of Irvine came out last week at a detention hearing for a brother-in-law of Osama bin Laden's bodyguard, an Afghan native and naturalized U.S. citizen named Amadullah Niazi. Niazi, 34, was arrested February 20th on charges of lying about his ties to terrorist groups on his citizenship and passport application. He will be arraigned Monday in U.S. District Court in Santa Ana. FBI Special Agent Thomas J. Ropel III testified at the hearing that an FBI informant infiltrated Niazi's mosque and several others in Orange County and befriended Niazi. Ropel said the information recorded Niazi on multiple occasions talking about blowing up buildings, acquiring weapons, and sending money to the Afghan Mujahideen. That, again, was recorded by the informant. Continuing, Niazi has not been charged with terrorism, and it's not yet clear if the FBI was focused on anything beyond his activities. Neither the mosque nor any others of its members have been charged. A 46-year-old fitness instructor told the Associated Press last week that he was the informant. Craig Montile of Irvine said Niazi talked about blowing up buildings and discussed sending Montile to a terrorist training camp in Yemen or Pakistan. Montile, M-O-N-T-E-I-L-H, said his tenure as an informant ended after Niazi and other members of the Islamic Center of Irvine reported him to authorities. A Muslim advocacy group has demanded a federal investigation into whether Niazi was arrested because he refused to become an FBI informant after telling the agency about Montile. The Muslim Public Affairs Council, or MPAC, has reacted by stating that the use of informants in mosques, quote, stigmatizes, unquote, the mosques and erodes trust. Well, having people like that inside those mosques does an awful lot of that as well. And again, to the extent that the Muslim Brotherhood, an Islamic fascist organization, I can't stress that strongly enough, can successfully represent itself as the civil rights slash moderate voice of the Islamic community in this and other countries, then to that extent, the world is doomed. And the CAIR, the Council on American Islamic Relations, is also little more than a Muslim Brotherhood front organization. Also from Global MB report, Global Muslim Brotherhood report, one of the things, too, that's disturbing about the Muslim Brotherhood is that in keeping with their history, both elements of British intelligence and the CIA are touting the Muslim Brotherhood as a desirable organization and other similar organizations. Now, this is not too far from home for these organizations because during the Cold War, the fascist Muslim Brotherhood was used actively by both British intelligence and the CIA as anti-communist elements within the Arab and Muslim world. And so it's really not all that far from home for these characters. But again, it's very disturbing to see people who get a fair amount of gravitas and traction once again running interference for the Muslim Brotherhood as a friendly organization that the West doesn't have to fear. This is from GlobalMuslimBrotherhoodReport.com or GlobalMBReport.com of Thursday, March 5th of 2009. This is titled, New Book by Former British Spy Says Hamas and Hezbollah Not Enemies of the West. And it reads in part, former British intelligence agent Alistair Crook has published a new book, which one reviewer says is aimed at reassuring the West that Hamas and Hezbollah are not enemies of the West. According to a review of the book by journalist Seymour Hersh posted on the website of Crook's organization, Crook's mission in this erudite and most readable book is to reassure America and the rest of the world that Hamas, Hezbollah, and the seemingly menacing Islamic governments in Iran and elsewhere are not true enemies of the West, a scholarly and closely argued critique of what passes for Western diplomacy today. Crook is a former agent of the British MI6 Foreign Intelligence Agency and is described in a media report as secretly one of Britain's leading intermediaries with militant groups. Former CIA agent Milt Bearden, who played a leading role in the war against the Soviets in Afghanistan and Graham Fuller, a former vice chair of the National Intelligence Council at the CIA, are members of the advisory board of the Conflicts Forum headed by Alistair Crook. Also a member of the advisory board is Azam Tamimi, a leading figure in the UK Muslim Brotherhood and often described as a Hamas spokesman. The media report cited above describes a March 2005 meeting in Beirut attended by Crook that included the Muslim Brotherhood as well as Musa Abu Marzouk, deputy leader of Hamas, and two of his senior colleagues, leaders of Lebanon's Hezbollah, and representatives of Pakistan's Jamaat-e-Islami party. Jamaat-e-Islami, of course, is the group that does the whyislam.org, and it's a Pakistani branch of the Muslim Brotherhood. In a number of recent programs, I have, I forgot off the top of my head whether it was 660 or 661, I reprinted the Hamas charter, and it not only talks about the global Jewish conspiracy has having caused both world wars and the United Nations and the League of Nations, the Kiwanis Club and the Masons and the Rotary Clubs are described as international Zionist fronts and outgrowths of the international Jewish conspiracy, and of course endorses the protocols of the Elders of Zion. Hamas is basically an Islamic Arab Nazi organization. That Hamas charter is pure, unadulterated Nazi propaganda. As far as Hezbollah being friendly, well, go to, for the record, 661 and take a look at the picture there. That's Hezbollah at a rally. They use the Nazi salute. Even more chilling, go to, there's a Time magazine photo essay on Hezbollah. It's called Inside Hezbollah, but it's spelled H-I-Z B-A-L-L-A-H. Again, Inside H-I-Z-B-A-L-L-A-H. Go to that website and take a look at the rally of the Hezbollah youth wing. It's very chilling indeed, and you tell yourself they're friendly to the West. I tell you, if you think those people are friendly to the West, I got a deal on some real estate in the Florida Everglades, plus a discount price on the Brooklyn Bridge that I want to sell you. More from globalmbreport.com. This from March 5th, also of 2009. Former FBI agent says all U.S. Muslim organizations controlled by U.S. Muslim Brotherhood. It reads in part, U.S. media is reporting that a former FBI agent with expertise in Islamic extremism and terrorism said that all major U.S. organizations are controlled by the Muslim Brotherhood, but that FBI officials are unwilling to act. According to the report, a former FBI special agent told law enforcement and Homeland Security personnel that a network of Islamic organizations are working to incrementally implement Islamic law in the United States. During a presentation at the Bedford County Emergency Management Agency, former FBI agent John Guandolo briefed members about groups such as the Muslim Brotherhood, which he claims is working with other Islamic groups to slowly implement Sharia, also known as Islamic law, which encompasses all areas of life. Every major Muslim organization is controlled by the Muslim Brotherhood, the former FBI agent said, which he said was formed to overthrow America and establish Islamic law. Quote, they're having great success at implementing Sharia law. I could give you 1,000 examples, Guandolo said. He said small concessions like installing foot baths and colleges forced to have separate swimming times for Islamic men and women so as not to offend Muslims are other parts of the strategy. But Guandolo said that the federal leadership is reluctant to act against these Islamic groups due to political correctness and the threats of lawsuits. I noted that right after Prince Al-Walid, a Muslim Brotherhood supporter, made a $25 million donation to Harvard University with a former PIMCO, that's a subsidiary of Allianz, the major German insurer, and thereby necessarily part of the Bormann Capital Network. Right after he made a $25 million donation to Harvard University, and not only did Harvard basically spawn the Mearsheimer and Walt report on the Israel lobby, but a gym and a cafeteria that had previously been co-ed were barred to women in deference to the tastes of Muslim male students at Harvard University. Once again, from Global MB report of Thursday, March 5th of 2009, leadership group figures support U.S. Muslim Brotherhood desire to change terrorism language. During a Senate hearing on Thursday, two leaders of the leadership group of the U.S. Muslim Engagement Project, an organization whose report promotes the agenda of the U.S. Muslim Brotherhood, expressed support for changing the language used to describe terrorism, a key objective of the U.S. Brotherhood. In her statement, former Secretary of State Madeleine K. Albright stated, "Western media are full of references to Islamic terrorism, but what does that mean? We do not portray the Oklahoma City bombing as Christian terrorism, even though Timothy McVeigh thought of himself as a Christian. McVeigh was guilty of mass murder, and there was nothing Christian about it. The same principle applies with Islam. When Muslims commit terrorist acts, they are not practicing their faith, they are betraying it." Well, first of all, as noted later in this article, Timothy McVeigh described himself as an agnostic. Timothy McVeigh also worked with Muslim elements, including, according to some sources, occupying some of the same turf as Mohammed Atta and other of the September 11th hijackers. The point that I made earlier in this broadcast can't be stressed strongly enough, that the Muslim Brotherhood is part of the Fascist International. And in, among other programs, For the Record 456, I basically document the integration between the Muslim Brotherhood and other fascist organizations such as the Italian Alleanza Nazionale and various German and American fascist organizations. And one of the most important things to understand are the evidentiary tributaries running between various terror acts of the late 80s, 90s, and this decade as well. The Lockerbie bombing of 1988, the first attack on the World Trade Center in 1993, the Oklahoma City bombing in 1995, the 1994 AMIA attack in Argentina, and the September 11th attacks all have some evidentiary tributaries in common. Please examine, among other broadcasts, For the Record 456 to flesh out your understanding. One of the organizations that has evidentiary tributaries connected to September 11th and the Aryan Nations and the Oklahoma City bombings, or one of the terror acts, was the AMIA bombing in Buenos Aires in 1994. We're going to conclude with an article from the YNetNews.com website. One of the investigators into that was recently kidnapped and tortured by Argentine terror authorities. This is from that website. Former investigator of 1994 terror attack Claudio Lifschitz says hooded men forced him into their car, tattooed case file number on his arm with a blowtorch, and told him not to mess with Internal Security Service. The Argentine daily Clarín reported Saturday that Claudio Lifschitz, a former investigator of the 1994 bombing of the Jewish Community Center in Buenos Aires, claimed he was kidnapped and tortured by elements trying to coerce him into disclosing documents related to the case. As documented in, again, among other programs, For the Record 456, the Argentine security personnel used at the operational level were parts, according to an FBI investigation, of White Aryan Resistance, an American fascist-slash-white supremacist organization headed up by Tom Metzger. Manzur El-Kassar, implicated in the Lockerbie bombing in 1988, helped to supply the explosives, and Hezbollah was implicated in that crime, as were elements associated with President Menem of Argentina. Again, the Muslim Brotherhood, part of the Fascist International, evidenced at a concrete level by, among other things, evidentiary tributaries connecting a bunch of supposedly unrelated terrorist incidents, both Islamic and otherwise. That concludes For the Record program number, side two of For the Record program number 667, update on September 11th and related matters, being recorded on March 22nd of 2009. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.